Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening, and we're brought to you, as always, through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who believe in the ideals and the future of our great country. We know that we are the nation, ladies and gentlemen, and we welcome you to Patriot Education, because we're all teachers and we're all students, and lifelong learning is the greatest gift we can give or receive. Tonight's topic is, what does it mean to be educated? It depends on who you talk to. In the minds of most liberal progressive educational theorists, being educated means having a piece of paper that says you attended some institution of learning for a certain period of time and managed to complete something or other that allowed you to get the piece of paper that said you attended for a certain period of time. I know that's a rather convoluted and involved way to explain it, but unfortunately these days, that piece of paper, which used to be called a diploma, really doesn't mean much other than the convoluted explanation I just gave you. To a conservative, to be educated means to be informed about the academic skills you need to be a functioning, hardworking citizen, and about your government and how it works so that you can use your education to choose wisely those who represent you in Congress and in the White House and in state houses and school boards and county boards of supervisors and city councils and the mayor's office all across the nation. To a sixth grader, to be educated means to have a passing grade on a test and an A on your report card, which you get because the teacher likes you. To a high school freshman, to be educated means to get the amount of points you need to get that piece of paper I mentioned earlier so you can go to college and get a good job. To the average American, to be educated means to have some string of letters behind your name. AB, BA, MA, PhD, DDS, all of those. My contention is that to be educated means different things to different people. Our public education system, in which I work, purports to educate our children. It does not define what it means by educate. The end results of its education are a less than 50% graduation rate in the vast number of high schools across the nation, a dropout rate that would shame a third world country, and a standing among developed countries that ranks us number one for self-esteem among high school students and number 27 for mastery of our own native language and basic math and science skills. Our children are well educated in, gee, aren't I happy I'm me and don't I feel good about myself? But they're not terribly well educated in communication, in writing or verbally, the understanding of how their government works and that the president doesn't give us money out of his stash, or the basic method of scientific reasoning that says a theory remains a theory until you have incontrovertible proof and then it becomes a law. To most of our kids, anything that they hear that promises them a reward of some sort must obviously be true, right, and fulfills their self-esteem because they are entitled to rewards simply because they exist. Our public education system, by its efforts and its results, also appears to define education as being a good member of the group and never saying anything that could possibly offend anyone. At least, not on purpose, and never, ever, ever questioning the principle that everybody is alike and deserves equal stuff in everybody's house. Well, my definition of education is a little different, ladies and gentlemen. To me, being educated means being taught the basic skills you need to continue learning until the day you die. There are probably many out there listening to me who are thinking, yeah, she really is a crazy old lady who wants to keep learning stuff, for heaven's sake. Isn't there a point when we can stop? Well, my contention is no, there isn't a point where we can stop. And I believe that our founding fathers would agree with me. They knew when they gave us a nation that exemplifies the belief that governments derive their powers from the consent of the governed, that the governed need to be educated. They need to know how to reason and think. They need to know how to question with boldness and not accept at face value anything told to them by those in power. Citizens of a nation like ours must be educated to be lifelong learners. All you have to do is look at the change in generational time in technology and its improvements. 20 years ago, a technological generation was 5 years. My guess is that now it's about 18 months. I'm living proof that you have to be a lifelong learner, ladies and gentlemen, because when I was in school, there were no PCs or Macs or cell phones or VCRs or GPSs. There weren't even any satellites other than the moon. There were no microwave ovens, so you actually had to read a recipe and put something on a stove or in an oven to cook it. A real oven that got hot, and you had to set a timer on, and a temperature. And you had to poke a thermometer in your meat to see if it was done. And you had to be able to understand how to make a recipe that feeds four feed eight by multiplying the fractions in the 2.5 tablespoons of whatever it is you put in it. I had to learn on my own how to use a computer, how to use my cell phone. I'm still struggling to learn how to use my new digital camera, which does so many things. I'm surprised it doesn't walk out to the kitchen and put my coffee in the microwave for me. If I were not a lifelong learner, ladies and gentlemen, I would be totally incapable of supporting myself or dealing with the world in which I live. And yet our public education system is deliberately or accidentally, and I'm not sure which, creating generations of dependent, stupid people who believe that learning something means getting an A on the test by matching the exact words that were on the test given to you as a study guide and taking an inspired guess if you can't remember something that you've spent 3 weeks studying. At a total system dump when the test is over with. Like 90% of the 6th graders and 7th graders and 8th graders I see who tell me, well, Mrs. Rowland, I don't have to know fractions. We finished those in 6th grade. Or I don't have to know how to solve those kind of equations. We're not on that anymore. Or I don't have to know the taxonomic classifications for living things. We had that test last week. Being educated, ladies and gentlemen, is not passing a test or a piece of paper with a university president's signature on it or a high school principal's imprint or the signature of the superintendent of schools on your 8th grade graduation paper certificate. Being educated is not carrying home A's on a report card in 7th grade with the attendant note that you are reading on 3rd grade level. Being educated is not giving everybody in a collaborative class the dumbed-down version of a test so that everybody will pass. Being educated is not increasing the difficulty level of state standards of learning and continuing to tell kids that they don't have to learn something if it's too hard for them. Or making so many modifications in the way the state standards of learning tests are administered that a child can take 7.5 hours to do a 2-hour reading test and be promoted to the next grade because he scored well enough. Being educated, ladies and gentlemen, is being aware of the fact that there is always something you don't know and that you can learn it if you try. There is a degree of social behavior involved in educating a person. We all need to be educated about how to get along with one another in as positive a way as possible, because without that, we would never be able to get anything done. We need to be educated about how to treat people. We need to know the golden rule and be taught that practicing it is a pretty good way to make sure that you're not going to commit evil accidentally. We need to be educated to understand that goes around comes around, and you get back what you give out. And we need to be educated in the fact that there are many, many cultures in the world, and that their differences can often make misunderstandings. But there is common ground if we just look for it. We need to be educated into understanding that we are responsible for our own choices. And because we are responsible, we need to carefully consider before we make choices. We need to be educated in the principle that our success derives from our effort. And we need to be educated in understanding that we don't have to like somebody to learn from them. We need to be educated in what we owe those who serve our nation and who put their lives on the line to keep it safe. And I have a small anecdote in that area. My schools here in Virginia had their last day of school on Wednesday. I work in a middle school, and Wednesday was not only the last day of school for everybody, it was the eighth graders' graduation. In my capacity as a paraprofessional, when I am not in charge of the in-school suspension room, and thank fortune we didn't have anybody in ISS on the last day of school, which was nice, I was given the task of sitting at a table in front of our gymnasium with sign-out sheets so that parents of graduating eighth graders could sign their student out in advance and go ahead and take them off for a party or take them home after the graduation ceremonies were completed. Well, as I sat there, an older gentleman came out of the gymnasium with his wife, and one of the other attendees had left a scooter chair, motorized chair, beside my desk, and I had promised I would watch it for him. The elderly gentleman who came out of the gymnasium was missing a leg and used a cane, and he and his wife asked if it would be all right if he sat in the motorized chair for a while because the hard bleachers in the gymnasium were very difficult for him, and I'm sure the gentleman wouldn't mind. So this gentleman sat down, and we chatted for a while, and he told me that this was just his second visit to our middle school. He was there to see his grandson graduate from eighth grade, and his first visit had been on the occasion of our Veterans Day ceremony last November. Every year, our middle school honors the veterans of our community by a ceremony where we have guest speakers, and we invite veterans from all over the county, all over the state, family and friends and relatives of our kids, so that we can show them that we appreciate and value their willingness to offer up their lives to protect our nation. Well, the gentleman told me that he was very impressed with our ceremony and that it felt really, really good to have somebody stand up and say thank you to him for his service in the Marine Corps in the 1950s. And even more, what impressed him and touched him deeply was a letter he had received, signed by several of our students, personally thanking him for his service in the military. Our kids need to do this kind of education. Not only were the students educated by being able to show respect to those who have most assuredly earned it, this gentleman was educated to know that he is not forgotten and his service is of value. And the personal touch hasn't disappeared from our world. This is part of being educated, ladies and gentlemen. It's not just books and tests and lab experiments and foreign languages and essays and term papers. It's learning how to learn and how to share what you have learned in positive, helpful ways. I spend a great deal of time both educating and being educated. I'm grateful for the opportunity to do so. And I understand that it is an opportunity and not a guarantee. That's another aspect of being educated that is being ignored in our current public education system. The concept of opportunity, meaning a chance to try, has become obscured by the fog of self-esteem building and anti-bullying kumbaya moments and political correctness and I'm entitled to fill in the blank because I'm fill in the blank. When I was a little girl in school, I knew, because it was reinforced at home, that my teachers knew a great deal more than I did, and that they were willing to share what they knew with me. And it was my responsibility to listen and pay attention and remember what they told me. Because I was being given a gift of knowledge that people, adults, had worked a long time to gain. And they were sharing it with me. And all I had to do was go there and open my eyes and my ears, and all of it could be mine. Every last bit of it. And nobody could ever take it away from me. It was mine forever. Mine to keep and to build on. I understood this because I was taught this. I had educated parents in the best sense of the word. My mother had a high school diploma and nothing passed. My father had a high school diploma and went to school through correspondence courses and through his various jobs to learn everything he could about his field of expertise, aeronautical engineering. He never turned down an opportunity to learn something. Ever. I grew up in an educated home. Neither of my parents had college degrees. My mother's mother had to struggle to keep her daughters in Catholic school. She was widowed when they were young. My grandfather had no insurance. She was not well educated herself. She had only gone through eighth grade. But she knew that the best thing she could do for her daughters was to give them the opportunity of education. And she didn't send them to public schools, ladies and gentlemen. She scraped and scrimped and worked as a housekeeper to send them to Catholic school. Not only because she was a practicing Catholic, but because she knew that they would get the very best education in that place. And they did. My mother and I used to play a game when I was 6 or 7 years old. She would say something incorrect in English, and I would correct her. And every time I did it right, that was a point for me. How many people play games like that with their kids these days? As I said, I grew up in an educated home, one in which knowledge and learning were valued for their own sake and as stepping stone opportunity for material success. My father believed with his whole heart that it was his responsibility and his duty as a parent to send his daughters to whatever higher institute of learning they would wanted to go to, and that he was the one who was going to pay for it. When, as an adult, I offered to repay him for my college education, he indignantly refused because, as he told me, "Kitten, that's my responsibility. I'm your father. That's part of my job." When I'm working in my capacity as ISS teacher, I try to create an educated classroom for my students. Not just the academics, ladies and gentlemen, but the educated classroom that says, if they ask me a question and I can't answer it, I tell them, I don't know, let me see if I can find an answer for you. An educated classroom where, this is too hard, I don't want to do it, it's boring, earns the response, too bad. Everything in life worth having is worth working for, and you probably won't get it if you don't work for it. I don't take days off because I'm bored with school and I want to pretend I'm sick so I'm not there. One of the reasons that my ISS classroom was closed on Fridays during the second semester of this year, because we had an epidemic of everybody on the teaching staff being absent and not enough substitutes to fill classrooms. So my principal told me that he was closing ISS on Fridays so I would be available to fill in any capacity where he needed me. I guess that's the penalty for being reliable. But it was a compliment, ladies and gentlemen. The best of compliments. It showed respect for my ability to teach any subject. It showed his ability to rely on me to be there when I was needed. It showed trust. It showed recognition of the fact that I could be trusted to be there at my job when I was supposed to be. I didn't get a raise. I didn't get an extra stipend. I didn't get a testimonial or a trophy. I got more work to do. But that was okay. Because he knew that I could and would do it to the best of my ability. And to me, that was worth more than a trophy or a stipend or a raise. Now, I would have liked the stipend and the raise. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that altruistic. But with a stipend or a raise, it would have been spent on something and it would have been gone. But that trust and that reliability that I demonstrated and that he saw, that's with me forever. I can look at that when I get frustrated and I want to say, oh, the heck with it, I think I'll have a stomachache and stay home. And I can say to myself, no, you won't, because you earned a good reputation and you want to keep it. And you didn't earn it because somebody liked you. You earned it because you did your job. You did the stuff that was taught. And some days it was, believe me. On the days when I had to fill in for three or four different teachers during the same day, it was a bit of a scramble. But it was also a learning experience for me. It refurbished information in various areas. It gave me a chance to do what I do in a way that helped people. And that's important to me. And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, that the vast majority of those who stay in education longer than the 5 years, after which most new ones quit, stay because of that. That desire to give something. That desire not only to educate, but to be an educated person. I read an article that was sent to me by one of my friends at Patriot Families that talked about a study done on homeschooled children. One of the quote-unquote drawbacks to homeschooling, according to the educational theorists on the progressive and political spectrum, is that these poor homeschooled children are going to grow up totally incapable of interacting with their peers because they're locked up in closets between lessons, I guess, I don't know, and they never get to mix with other children, and they will be rigid and impossible for them to talk with anybody because they're being segregated away from the other children. And this article basically quoted a study that showed that homeschooled children were better socialized and more responsible in their social contacts by about, 30 percentile points than the average high school student in public schools. Most of the homeschool kids aren't spending 7.5 hours bored in a classroom. They're out there going to museums and meeting other kids on sports teams and taking horseback riding or dance lessons or getting involved with the neighbors or mowing lawns and getting to know the adults in the neighborhood or helping out with family chores and learning practical things as well as their academics. They're being educated, ladies and gentlemen, in the best sense of the word. They're not just learning the academic skills that they need to compete in today's ever more difficult world. They're learning the people skills and the thinking skills and the responsibility skills that every single one of us who care about our children and grandchildren want them to learn. Being educated is an absolute survival necessity, not only among humans, but among any living creature. The learning curve for the various mammals increases with the level of intelligence they have. Horses have a very short learning curve. Okay. Foxes have a very long one. Foxes are quite bright. They stay with their parents, the kids stay with their mother, for at least 2 to 3 years before they go off on their own, because foxes have a heck of a lot to learn. Well, if fox mothers can figure it out, why can't humans? We have so much to learn, ladies and gentlemen. The complexity of our lives, our societies, our global economy, our ideologies, our religious belief systems, our social mores, our family customs. It is a huge amount to learn. And it has been multiplied by an order of magnitude with the growth of the internet and technology and communications. We have the universe to learn, ladies and gentlemen, and we are crippling our children so they won't be able to even manage to feed themselves in it. We are telling them that being educated means passing a test and getting a piece of paper. They have no clue what it means to teach or learn. To the vast majority of kids that I see in my classroom, learning something doesn't mean retaining it. It means spitting it back out like vomiting up your hot dog on a test and being glad you got rid of it and now you can go play with your DS and text somebody. The idea that I still know how to do fractions at age 65 is amazing to these kids. It literally is amazing to them. How can you possibly know that, Mrs. Rowland? I had it last month. I don't remember how to do it. There are times, ladies and gentlemen, when my poor husband has to put up with me coming home either on the verge of tears from sheer frustration or ready to bite a cat. How do you get across to our kids that learning something doesn't mean passing a test on it? It means putting the knowledge in your head and keeping it there. I know that many of you out there listening probably think that I am making this up. I am not. I wish I were. I could become wealthy telling horror stories. I could be the new Stephen King if my imagination were good enough to make this up. And my imagination's pretty good, but I don't have to make it up because I see it every day. I see the assumption that our children are being spoon-fed to believing that they don't have to know anything because there's always a calculator or a Google search or an easy button or somebody to do it for them if it's too hard. One of the reasons that I would like to see more survival camps for kids created is because I would like them to find out what it's like when there isn't an easy button. If they have to go out and clean a latrine, if they have to go out and gather firewood and chop logs, if they have to go to a well and physically draw up water, put it in a pot and put it on the fire to heat it enough to wash dishes with, if they're the ones who have to walk to the nearest store around the corner to buy the flour and the fresh eggs they need to make the pancakes with a spoon in a bowl and put it on a griddle on a stove heated by wood to have breakfast in the morning. My friend Linda likes the idea, and she says, "Can you hear the complaints already?" You bet I can. Anybody who ran the camp would be in jail for child abuse in about a heartbeat and a half. "Our poor delicate children. Oh, my God, you let him use a hatchet. Ah, he could have chopped his foot off. Ah, fire. Oh, my God. You mean there was a fireplace? Oh, he could have burned to death. Oh, you let him walk to a store. Oh, my God, he could have been eaten by bears." And believe me, it's not an exaggeration, ladies and gentlemen. If you took the majority of kids from schools in anywhere other than rural communities and put them in a survival camp for 4 days, every single one of them would probably be screaming and running through the woods trying to get back to civilization after the first 20 minutes. Especially if they weren't allowed to bring their Nintendo DS or their cell phone with them. You would have an absolute, the police would come, the EMTs would be there, the fire department, everybody would be there. They would be sure that you were chopping them up in little pieces and cooking them for breakfast. And you'd be hauled off and put in jail, and everybody would hate you. And, oh, my God, it would make the latest child abuse trials look like, aren't we happy these children were sexually molested, and let's let them do it again. Our kids have absolutely no understanding that the things they use every day didn't always exist, and there might come a time when they won't be there. I'm not a doomsday prophet, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not a survivalist. I'm not a militia member. I don't want to go live in the woods in a hut and shoot anybody who comes on my property, although I might if I thought they were going to hurt me. But I do want our children to be able to recognize what effort is and that you can't always have what you want just by wanting it. Yes, it's drastic. Yes, it's abusive. But it's a great learning opportunity. And you know, I think there are a lot of adults out there who need a good dose of survival camp too. There's one in the Oval Office that I'd nominate to be camper number one in a heartbeat. But that's just me being nasty. I hope he's offended. I'm trying to offend him. I doubt that he's listening, but if he is, sorry about that. If you're offended, that's your problem, not mine. And I'm sorry, the definition of poverty in this country is absurd. It is unbelievable. Poverty is not having anything to eat and not having anything to wear. Poverty is not having only one television, one car, and one air conditioner, and one cable, and one computer. I have come close to poverty, ladies and gentlemen, nowhere near as close as people in Bangladesh or sub-equatorial Africa, but I have come close. I know what it's like to hunt through furniture to try to find enough quarters to put together to get my 8-year-old used car inspected so I can drive my husband to the hospital for his cancer treatment. And that's not to pat myself on the back. I didn't like it. And no, I don't want to go back there. And no, I don't want to live that way. And no, I don't want to do it again. But I survived, and so did my husband. Because we had amazingly good medical technology and care. And we both had the understanding that nothing is guaranteed in this life except our freedom to choose. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is guaranteed by our Bill of Rights and the wisdom of our founding fathers who put it at the end of our Constitution. My friend Linda said, pretty soon if the financial meltdown happens, we're all going to need survival camp, and she's not too far wrong. Most of us don't understand what it means to be truly educated. Being educated means understanding that want is nice, but it doesn't mean have. Being truly educated means understanding that things can go away. They can be destroyed. They can be taken from you. You cannot be able to afford them. You can lose them. Someone bigger and stronger and meaner than you can come and shoot you, and then you have nothing, and your things won't protect you. Survival camp is another form of being educated. And as my friend Linda says, knowing the difference between basic needs and what the definition of a want is. And I would add, knowing the difference between a right and a good. There's a lot of confusion with that pair of words, too. That education is a right. It isn't. It's a good. It's a good thing that if you have any sense, you want. But it is not a right. Only education could say is right, and that's contingent upon whether or not whoever gave birth to you really gave a rat's behind about keeping you alive. The only education that's your right comes along with being alive and being birthed by a mother and hopefully having a father whose obligation it is, because they brought you into the world, to feed and clothe and teach you what you need to know. How to walk, how to talk, how to manipulate objects using your hands, things of that nature. That's about the only education that you can say is a right in the same sense that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are rights from nature and nature's God, to quote, to paraphrase Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence. Education was not a right in the minds of our founding fathers. Education was a good. It was a goal. It was an incredibly valuable thing, but it was not a right. An education was an opportunity. and those who didn't automatically have that opportunity because of their economic or geographical or ethnic situation usually scrambled like crazy to get a chance to get that opportunity. Academic education is a necessity in our world, ladies and gentlemen, but it is not a right. Education in and of itself means the acquiring of knowledge and or skills. That's what it means. It doesn't mean a piece of paper. It doesn't mean a grade. It doesn't mean a big fancy building. It doesn't mean a football team that wins all conference or all championships. It doesn't mean teachers who have to be everything, including parents, to students. It doesn't mean field trips. It doesn't mean new buses. It doesn't mean dances or parties or proms. No. Nope. It means to acquire the acquiring of knowledge and or skills. That's what education is. We have covered it up and wrapped it up and tricked it out and painted it over with so much garbage that the real meaning of being educated has almost disappeared from our public schools. And unless we do something about it, it will disappear altogether. I'm very, very fortunate, ladies and gentlemen, to work with really dedicated, excellent teachers who keep trying to do what's right instead of what's easy. They try their best to share what they know with their students and to help their students acquire the knowledge and skills that they need to continue to learn and make progress along their own life paths. And along the way, contribute something to the world we live in. But because government and liberal college professors in the education industry have taken what is a good and a fairly simple idea and twisted it out of all recognition, turned it into a magic key to becoming a millionaire or a status symbol that shows how compassionate they are when they give a high school diploma to a student whose basic academic skills are at fourth grade level and are likely to remain that way. My friend Linda has, as always, put it quite succinctly. The government's running an institution where the workers are teachers, or the employees, and the kids are the unwilling customers, and the product stinks. If we didn't have public education, ladies and gentlemen, we'd have better educated citizens. And I know Jefferson and Adams and Franklin and the rest of them are rolling over and over in their graves to the point that they look like whirling dervishes. Without public education, we'd have an educated population instead of a bunch of spoiled brats who are moaning and groaning that their entitlements are 2 days late and who believe that Obama is going to give them enough money to buy a car and buy a house out of his private stash. And that everybody deserves equal stuff in everybody's house. No, you don't. You deserve opportunity. Opportunity isn't a guarantee you're going to succeed at whatever it is you try. It's just a chance to try. The trying part's up to you. Our kids are learning this, ladies and gentlemen. They're learning, it's too hard, means they don't have to try. It means they don't have to put forth any effort at all. The teachers are magic beings who can open a hole in their skull, stick a funnel in, and pour everything the teachers learned through 4 to 8 years of college into the child's head, neatly close the hole, and send the kid off with an A on his report card. I can't do it. I don't know any teacher who can. A friend of mine at the school where I work made a comment on Facebook the other day that she wished she could teach at Hogwarts. So do I. I would love to teach at Hogwarts. If you can't transfigure your hedgehog into a pincushion, you don't get passing marks in transfiguration. If you can't produce a Patronus, you get your owl in defense against the cards. If you don't learn the stuff, you don't pass. There aren't any social promotions. There aren't any accommodations to get up and walk out of class because you're stressed, so you won't pick up a desk and throw it at somebody. In one of the Harry Potter books, Goblet of Fire, as a matter of fact, the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, Mad-Eye Moody, catches the nasty Draco Malfoy attempting to shoot a spell Harry Potter's back when Harry can't see him. And so Professor Moody points his wand and turns Malfoy into a charming little albino ferret and bounces him up and down several times to get through his head that you don't do that. There have been times, ladies and gentlemen, that I so wished for a magic wand. Oh, I would have probably given a couple of fingers to be able to turn somebody into a ferret and bounce them around 3 or 4 times. And I'm not just talking about my student. But unfortunately, I don't teach at Hogwarts, and I don't have a magic wand, and I'm not Mad-Eye Moody, and my defense against the dark arts is to try to follow the golden rule as best I can and set an example for the kids I teach. And it gets harder and harder because I'm beginning to think that the dark arts practiced by Lord Voldemort is busily making its inroads in the United States Congress and the White House. But dreams aside and my desire to teach at Hogwarts aside, there are plenty of me's out there, ladies and gentlemen, lots of men and women who believe, as I do, that one of the greatest callings one can ever have is to teach. Being a teacher is having an incredible amount of power. Being a teacher is right up there with being a miracle worker. If you remember the play about Helen Keller and her teacher, Ann Sullivan. Teachers are miracle workers. We really are. They're the kind of small miracles that St. Teresa talked about, the ones that people don't notice. The little ways, the small things that people do to make life better or more comfortable for others around them. Teachers generally are considered to be either educated idiots, lazy layabouts who can't get a real job, dedicated professionals, or little old ladies who have nothing better to do. And I'm guessing that there are teachers who fall into all of those categories. And no, I'm not teaching because I have nothing better to do. I'm teaching because I more or less have to. I seem to have been born to do it. But I do understand the responsibilities and the great power I wield. And so do most religious teachers. We know we are in a position to give a child the chance to be everything he is capable of. Pardon me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm losing my voice. Combination of lots of humidity and my sinuses telling me about it. Sorry about that. And having to spend a lot of time doing a lot of talking in my job. Again, I guess I'm kind of stuck with it because I can't seem to do anything else. Or if I did, I wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much. But as my friend Linda Sills says, a good teacher is a gift. I am eternally grateful to the ones I had. All of them taught me something, even the ones I didn't like. If nothing else, they taught me not to be like them. I learned because I wanted to, ladies and gentlemen. I learned because my parents were lifelong learners and educated in the best sense of the word. And they didn't have to encourage me or beat me or punish me or spank me or demand this or take away that, because I could see that they thought learning was a really cool thing, that it was something that was fun. Unfortunately, that belief that learning is fun got merrily twisted out of shape along with every other good idea in education by our benevolent government and a happy desire to be compassionate to everyone. And what it translates to now is, well, if it isn't fun, I don't have to learn it. And yeah, I'm not making that up either. I've had kids tell me that. Not necessarily in so many words, but the implication is, well, this isn't any fun, or this is boring. Why do I have to learn it? Well, I'm sorry. Sometimes what you have to learn is boring. Cleaning toilets and learning how to clean toilets is pretty doggone boring. But unless you want a really filthy house and lots of germs and everybody's sick, you better figure out how to clean toilets. I know you don't like fractions. You don't like fractions because you actually have to work the problem out step by step, and you have to push one button on a calculator to get an answer. One of the biggest hurdles that middle school students face, over and above hormones, is the understanding, trying to be pounded into them in mathematics, in math class, the difference between thinking arithmetically and mathematically. Through the first five grades of school, our kids are taught arithmetic. They're taught the answer. You have to get the right answer. Then they hit middle school, and now they start teaching basic pre-algebra and equations and inequalities and graphing and so on the coordinate plane. In sixth grade, these are mathematical concepts. Mathematics is not about an answer. Mathematics is about a process to get an answer. And the number of kids who run flat-faced into a stone wall because they cannot make the transition. And part of the reason they can't is because they haven't been taught how to think. Everything they're given to study is in the exact words that are going to be on the test. Every bit of notes they have, they don't take notes anymore, ladies and gentlemen. The notes are handed to them, and they fill in the blank as the teacher reads them out loud. the absolute horror that went through our middle school this year when the kids found out that they were actually going to have to answer short answer questions or essay questions instead of all multiple choice on their standards of learning tests. We almost had a revolution. And not a very nice one. Our kids are not being educated. Our kids are being indoctrinated into progressive, feel-good ideology, being, quote-unquote, given grades to make them feel good. They're being advanced from grade to grade when they have not mastered the skills required for such advancements. They're being told that the world is going to accommodate to their particular, quote-unquote, disability because the school does, and that they're not obligated to abide by the same rules as everybody else, that exceptions will be made for them because they, quote-unquote, can't help it when their behavior passes the bounds of appropriate. They're being spoon-fed. And as my friend Linda says, they're being lied to. And she's right, they are. They are being led to expect a world that lies down and rolls over and says, scratch my belly, I'll give you everything. Or you don't even have to scratch my belly, just stand there and I'll give you everything. And the world doesn't do that. And it never will. As I said earlier, ladies and gentlemen, if mother foxes can figure out it takes a while to learn something, why can't mother humans and father humans? Parents have got to stop giving up their rights in their children to a public education system that cannot possibly fulfill the duty of parents. We as teachers cannot give children a love of learning if it's not taught or reinforced at home. We cannot give a child the satisfaction of having achieved success with effort if we're told to pat them whether they pass or not so we don't damage their self-esteem. We can't open their skulls and pour what we know into them and sew them back up again and send them home with it. We can't do our job with our hands tied behind our back and a gag in our mouths. We can't continue to allow teachers' unions to use their political power to elect more progressive idiots to control and destroy our nation and its future by creating uneducated, dependent baby sheep instead of citizens. Looks like I have a call coming in, ladies and gentlemen. Let me see who's on the line. Hello.
Hello, Miss Terry. It's Linda in California. How are
you? I figured it would be. How are you today, Linda?
Pretty good. You know, it's funny because one of the guys on our local station here, he talks about the failing education system here in California and pretty much everywhere because the federal government has their stupid myths into it. And you know how that works.
Oh, yeah.
You see how that works on a daily basis.
Oh, yes, I do.
And what he was talking about was, he said, they're actually just shoving these kids through, you know, whether they can do anything or not. There's these rules that you can only hold back somebody one year, you know, at a time. And so here's seventh graders only reading on a third grade level because, you know, there's no way for them to catch up. How do you, you know, these. I feel sorry for the teachers who get those kids.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's
insane. Oh, believe
me.
As an example, remember I told you about the kid that I worked with who it took 7.5 hours to complete a 2-hour reading test?
Oh, Lord.
And when his mother, in a meeting with the teacher, said, you know, he can't keep up. Well, but his score was so good, so we have to promote him.
Unbelievable.
That's ridiculous. I know.
Yeah.
The child would sit in class and be totally unable to finish one question before the rest of the class had done 10.
Well, you know, to me, from what I'm seeing, especially in the public sector and the federal government, the National Department of Education, which is just ridiculous, and then even in the state and somewhat local levels, when you're dealing with taxpayer money and it's all government run, it's just horrible.
Yes.
Why don't we try this?
Yes.
Let's do a free market system where the workers are the teachers and they get to do their job, and the kids are the customers, or the parents and the kids are the customers, and the product is an excellent education. Now, if that school does not give a good product, it will go out of business like every other business, which it and indeed it should. You know what I'm saying? This is the premise of the free market system. This is the whole idea behind it. And why can't we do that? Why?
Because the public education system right now is Solyndra.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It's Solyndra.
Well, yeah, they're throwing money down a rat hole. They're doing the broken washing machine thing. Yeah. And they keep saying it over. This is in campaign speeches. I've heard this for decades. I'm sick of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're fed up to the eyeballs, too. But because you're right in the middle of the belly of the beast, as I call it. But
and Jonah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think people are starting to get it though. Even in California, you know, they're going into the austerity, you know, measures. Scott Walker's state, of course, woke up and got it right. You know, it's going in the right direction. And I do believe it's long overdue, but at least it's a beginning.
And
the more people push back, yeah, I think so, because I know this week and this weekend and all summer, Glenn's doing all these food drives, and he's also doing the bake sales and he's doing the lemonade stands. In fact, I think yesterday when I was doing my show, they had a bake sale across the street from me, and I didn't get a chance to get over there, but he's encouraging people to do it all over the United States. And I'm telling you, he's got now, in 1 week, he got people gathering together. He's got 1 million meals. And there's, you know, this is it's a wonderful philanthropic thing to do to help people. But he's also showing the government, we're not playing by your rules anymore. If we want to feed homeless people, we're going to feed them. It's his one bowl of soup or his 11 trucks of, you know, because we can't allow this to happen in this country. We just got to push
back. And in a way, it's his survival camp. Well, FT in the chat room just said that he believes, or she believes, education is extremely flawed, but how would we measure a good education in a free market and you need a standard? Well, yes, you would. Keep the standards of learning, just as the No Child Left Behind demanded. Make them real. And then that would determine whether or not your kids, if they didn't get that, okay, do it every year for every school if they want to. And if your kids aren't getting there, then you take them out of that school and that school goes under. You don't have the option now. There's nowhere else to go.
They're captive customers. And it's fascism. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Even the standards of learning, Linda, that were called for under No Child Left Behind, how many states now have opted out and have been given waivers of, you really don't have to meet these standards? I think it's something like 25 or 26 states. What is the point of having them? And the other difficulty, because they don't really mean anything. All they do is measure a school and determine whether or not you get money. If they were really used the way they're supposed to be, as a measure of whether or not the students have absorbed the knowledge they need to go on to the next grade, but they're not. They don't even figure in the pass-fail.
That's horrible.
They don't use them at all in the grading system.
All they're Yeah, all they're doing right now is funding, you know, the teachers' unions and the coffers of their pensions or whatever. That's basically, and the kids and the parents are left out in the cold. I mean, it's just, no wonder the kids are bored.
I'm lucky because I live in a right-to-work state. And yes, we have the teachers union, but the teachers union does not have the kind of power here. I'm guessing they're probably maybe out of all of our faculty in the school system, I would be surprised if 20% actually belong to the union. I would be very surprised because it's not a mandate. We do not have to. We are not forced to join the union in order to work. Thank you, Virginia. And I believe that the union movement, when it's applied to the public sector, and I don't just mean education, I mean public workers and so on, does the opposite of what it was intended to do. What it does is it basically hamstrings state legislatures and the federal government because they owe their election to the union funds. And the people who are deciding whether or not the union workers in the federal government, the state government, and so on, are the ones that, who are being put in there by the money from those unions. It's ridiculous. The original union movement was a good movement, and it made sense. It stopped rapacious employers from stiffing the working people who made the product. And the union's ability to strike and make it impossible for the company to keep working forced both sides to sit down and talk together. The union members did not have stock in the company, okay? But they did have a lever to use to try to get things equalized. But like any other positive force for change, they became so powerful that power corrupted, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the same thing is happening in the teachers' unions, the public employee unions. The idea that me, you owe me because I am more important than everybody else. I do something that the world can't live without. Well, doggone it, breathing is not something the world can't live without.
Well, you know,
I'm not breathing. The world's not going to end.
This is the same failed system that we have in our corporatocracy, in our state legislators, in our federal legislators. Everybody is so concerned about having this lifelong tenure to keep making all this money. They've got so many perks with the insider trading. They've exempted themselves from the laws that they impose on everyone else. And so, the senators of each state, it's just one giant socialist contract. It's horrible.
Well,
it
comes back to what it means to be educated, Linda. It always comes back to that. It's the assumption that if you are in a position of power, however you get there, that you are automatically assumed to be incredibly greater than anybody else. And the assumption being that, well, obviously you wouldn't have gotten elected if you weren't smart. No, people don't get elected because of expertise, their ability. In our current situation, in our political system, you get elected because you can fund more TV commercials because we have an uneducated population who believes their second pop sound bite.
And of course, they
don't even know these people.
I know. And the other thing too, they're doing is standing up there promising to, you know, redistribute wealth, and so these clowns with their hands out, you know, for Obama's staff, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
And so
and
these people actually believe that this system, what I call communism, is going to work. And they have been brainwashed. I would say 9/10 of the people in both houses of Congress, and of course the White House, they have sucked up that Kool-Aid, and they actually spew it out of their mouths. They believe it. They are so well indoctrinated. It just makes my head just explodes.
And the ones who don't believe are quite cynical and smart enough to use it. And it wouldn't have the effect it has, Linda, if we hadn't been teaching our kids they were entitled to everything for the last 40 years. If we had not been creating the people who vote for these jerks, they wouldn't be there.
Exactly.
If we had not been telling our children that being alive entitles them to equal stuff in everybody's house, we would not have the president we have. We would not have half the people in Congress that we have. The people who have been there for 40 years only stay there because they know where the bodies are buried, and the idiots poke a button on a ballot box for a name that sounds familiar.
I know.
Because they can't
You know, I told my cousin, because she called me, we had the primary on June 5th, whatever week that
ours
was. Anyway,
Republican primary was this Tuesday. My Tea Party lady didn't make it. We're stuck with George Allen running on the Republican ticket.
So my cousin calls me up and she says, okay, I don't know what this is and I don't know what that is. And I said, all right, you got to do a little bit of homework here. I says, do not vote blindly for these school boards, these judges. You must find out who these people are. I explained to her how I learned my people, you know, and anything else that was going down the pike, you know, like Prop 29 and 28, that was a statewide measure. So her county would be voting the same way. Okay, so I said, now these, you got to read these things, but I said, I'm voting no on all this stuff. And I said, when in doubt, if it's going to cost the taxpayers money, you can say no to it and feel a little bit better. I said, but your judges and whoever's on there, that you know, whatever, if it's a hospital board, a school board, a judge, you've got to find out who these people are. And I explained to her, the reason that I know who to vote for and not vote blindly ever again is because every time I go to a meeting in my community, whether it's Tea Party or whatever, these gentlemen, they have forums. They have candidate forums, and they all speak. So my homework came right to my face. I didn't have to do much except go to a meeting, and they all converged and gave us their views. And I'm telling you, it makes all the difference in the world. Once you know what you know who you are, what you want out of a candidate, what they stand for, and if it doesn't jive with what you're thinking, man, there's your ticket right there. You've got to know what you stand for, what side of the aisle you're on, you know. And I'm saying not right versus left. I'm saying right versus wrong.
Yeah. Well, my dear girl, you just described what it means to be educated.
Thank you.
You described
it
perfectly.
I'm still learning.
Aren't we
all? It's a long road.
Aren't we all?
And you know what? The beauty of it is the more I'm involved, the more people are – you know, listening to me and considering me credible, which is amazing, and the speeches that I give, it's phenomenal. I'm so pleased, like I had said last week. And then my friend Lynn Welke asked me to do a speech next Monday at that Tea Party meeting on what's going on here in Oceanside, because they want to get involved as well. And I said, thank you so much. And I will bring the knowledge that I do have and try to, you know, coax people to come and get into that vision meeting with me next Tuesday, because it's so important. We've got to fight against these UN Agenda 21 and ICLEI, I'm telling you. And if they didn't like my speech last week, they're really going to hate this one.
Good.
They're going to be real miserable.
You go right ahead, honey. You do it. Oh. You give them hell.
Well,
because
you know what
that's
I did? Yeah, I put together a Glenn Beck chalkboard. You should see my timeline. It's hysterical.
Oh,
yeah.
Good for you, honey. That's what we have to have, darling. We have to have people who are willing to stand up and say what they know, even if it isn't popular speech. The problem I hear so often and that I see so often is the assumption that freedom of speech means, yes, you can say anything you want so long as it doesn't offend anybody. Well, that's garbage.
Yep.
You can't possibly feel strongly or passionately about something that you believe to be right and make the assumption that somehow or other nobody's going to disagree with you.
Right.
People disagree with each other all the time. Our founding fathers understood this, they knew this, and they knew that if we had the chance to talk, we'd be less likely to pick up a rock and bash each other's heads in.
Yes, the battlefield of ideas, and I just love that, that one when Jefferson, I think it was Adams who said, and if you vote for Thomas Jefferson, you can go out in the street and look for your children's heads on pikes.
Exactly. And say we're being terribly, terribly vicious, and we should be more, polite? Civil discourse, right?
Oh,
I don't think they ever looked at the campaign literature from that particular fight. I really don't
absolutely.
Think they did.
No.
Oh, well,
And during the Reconstruction period, they were just vicious.
Oh my God!
Oh, my Lord!
the red shirt radical Republicans in Congress. My Lord! Some of the things that golly, and
I know
even some of the things that were said about Lincoln when he was running for the Senate, and you know the Southerners calling him a hairy ape as president. You know,
Oh sure.
And people refuse to accept the fact that if you're going to live in a world with diversity, you're going to eventually butt heads with people whose diversity doesn't match yours.
Right.
There's all common ground. We all want basically the same things. But we've all, and throughout the history of mankind, we've figured out zillions of different ways that we think we're going to get it, either for individuals or groups or societies or tribes,
right,
or whatever. And whenever you get two forces that want the same piece of real estate or the same resource, and neither one of them is willing to work out a deal, they fight each other. It's what human beings do. And no matter how much the progressives want to believe that we're evolving toward Godhood, they are wrong. We're not. And every one of these idiot theories that they cram down the throats of our teachers and our kids are based on this idea that somehow or other, if we all just sit around and hold hands, we will eventually ascend into the heavens and live in utopia right here.
Oh, I know.
And,
oh, it's so ridiculous.
And
I'm not
a pessimist, Linda. I'm an optimist. You couldn't keep doing what I do and be a pessimist. You'd shoot yourself. I would. You know, I'd have been, you know, in my grave with a, you know, still holding a revolver. But I do understand human nature, and I understand that I can be as idealistic as I choose, and I can stand up and burn at the stake for my beliefs, but I can't expect everybody else to join me in the fire. They're not going to do it. I'm going to have to accept that if I'm going to say something unpopular, people are going to be mad at me.
Yep, absolutely.
And I'm going to have to accept that and go ahead and say it anyway. But this is another aspect of being educated, understanding that reality is reality, and all the hope and change in the world isn't going to change it. There are going to be people who, for whatever reason, will not be able to become doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, just as there are going to be people who, no matter what their original circumstances, are going to claw their way to the Indian chief or doctor or lawyer, because it's in them to do so. We are not identical genetic ants in a colony bred to do thus and so. This isn't Brave New World, no matter how much the progressives want it to be. We aren't going to come out of bottles.
And that gives us hope, because we know they're going to fail at these attempts, because they've done it throughout history. Right.
That's why they fail, because they deny the basic nature of human beings. They focus on, and you know, the funny part is, progressives really think human beings are slime, because they have to regulate us because we're so base and so horrible and so vicious and evil that, and so stupid, that if they didn't tie us up tight in regulations so we had no choices at all other than to do what they tell us, we would wreck havoc and the entire planet would blow up. Well, maybe, okay? But we might just figure out on our own, with talking to each other and trying to be decent to one another, a way not to make the planet blow up.
Exactly.
By making free choices to do what's right, instead of being forced down a road we don't belong in because somebody more wise than we, who is a progressive politician, thinks he knows exactly what we should do with our lives.
Oh, I know. They should take a page out of Donald Trump's book, because he makes great deals with people, and he doesn't bash any heads.
Exactly.
He sits down and negotiates with them.
Exactly. And kind of like William Shatner's Priceline negotiator character.
Absolutely. All right, I'm going to let you finish it out, and thank you for taking my call. It's been an absolutely great show.
It's always a pleasure to hear your voice, dear girl. You know that.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. Also, that was my friend, that lovely bird of paradise, the California conservative, Linda Sills. And you must tune into her show every Wednesday night, right from the left coast. And she'll keep you up to date on what's happening in the wonderful state of California, which may decide to come back and join the United States one of these days. If Linda has anything to say about it, it will. Instead of, you know, wanting to be part of the old disappeared Soviet Union. But anyhow, Linda is an example of an educated person, because she doesn't stop learning. She doesn't stop trying to find out. She doesn't ever stop wanting to know the truth and wanting to speak it. People like Linda, and like the veterans who put their lives on the line first, and who are surprised and very grateful to find that somebody noticed, like me, who sits in a classroom with a bunch of charming children who don't really understand that rules apply to them, and it's always a good policy to engage brain before opening mouth, and do the best I can to try to give them knowledge and skills and set realistic standards, as FT was talking about, that no, you don't get an A on fractions if you can't do them, but you write your name correctly on the top of the test paper. We can fix our nation, ladies and gentlemen, and return it to the shining beacon on the hill and make it, again, the place everyone looks to for the example of freedom with responsibility. We can do this because we are the nation. Every single one of us, as I have said many times, is both a teacher and a student. We teach by how we act and how we treat one another. We teach by how we live what we believe in. We learn every single day in this magnificent, amazing, diverse world of ours. The incredible amount of life on this planet in all its forms and the ability to find out about it. The internet, Al Gore's invention, that gives us access to more knowledge than the most educated man in the world 500 years ago would be utterly awe-stricken and standing open-mouthed at the access to things to find out about that we have. And what do we do with it? We post photos of our picnic on Facebook. I'm glad you had a picnic. It's a nice photograph. I'm glad the family enjoyed themselves. I have nothing against Facebook. But if we only stay in our tiny little cubicle and assume that we've already learned everything there is to know, and this is too hard or too difficult, so why do I have to learn it? And so long as I feel good about myself, I don't have to try. Then we are doomed, and I refuse to believe it. Because I believe in human beings, I believe in America, I believe in its principles, that freedom goes hand in hand with responsibility, and that people can govern themselves. They can educate themselves, and they can educate each other. I believe that we are a great people here in this nation, and that one of our missions in life is to let the rest of the world in on how we do it. And it isn't because we make 40,000 new regulations every 10 minutes, or have equal stuff in everybody's house, or feel good about ourselves. It's because we believe, as our founding fathers did, that every human being deserves an opportunity. An opportunity to everything that he or she has the skills, talents, and drive to become. Please join us for our radio shows every week, ladies and gentlemen. Frank is set up on Sunday. Constitution Hour on Monday, Patriot Families Chat on Tuesdays, Right from the Left Coast on Wednesday, Patriot Education every Thursday, and Mortgage Help, Foreclosure Help on Fridays, and Breaking the Illusion on Saturday. And visit us at our website, www.patriotfamilies.com, where you will meet a great group of people who believe in this nation and everything it stands for, and who believe that they should take advantage of the opportunity to do what is right instead of what is easy. Thanks for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Keep learning and keep teaching one another. And remember, we are the nation. This nation stands or falls because of what we do. And we will do it with all our hearts. Good night, everyone. God bless.